And when I think Thanksgiving food drive, and I'm Kathy Beecham, by the way, and I've been around Crossroads, I think 11 of those 15 years we did food drives, I've been here doing that. And when I think Thanksgiving food drive, it's like, summer really is over. It really is. So is the fall, and it's Christmas shopping and Christmas list, holidays, year-end giving. So if you're like me, you're thinking about that. I usually put Crossroads on my list at year-end, so join me if you can in doing that. Really, that's what this week is all about. It's about how we sacrifice our time, our resources, to actually serve. And the question really is, why does serving make us strong? I mean, last week we did training, as Hannah said. We passed training, right? This week, we are officially made soldiers. And we're going to explore today about the battlefield that we're on. Now, Paul, who was a follower of Jesus, he wrote lots of letters to other followers of Jesus, trying to exhort him. And he talks about what it means to be a soldier in 2 Timothy. This is what he says. He says, endure hardship with us, like a good soldier of Christ Jesus. No one serving as a soldier gets involved in civilian affairs. He wants to please his commanding officer. Now, before we dive in to what it means to serve, to be a soldier, I want to introduce you to one of our very own soldiers. Justin is one of our key volunteer leaders in Mason. He's a star. I mean, he is amazing. I mean, he got listed in the 40 under 40. Some of you are familiar with this. Cincinnati Business Courier every year highlights 40 young people, meaning under 40, in Cincinnati that are high achievers, and he got listed with them because he serves the city so much. I mean, he's involved with the regional chamber. He's doing this whole professional, young professional initiative called HYPE, where we're trying to figure out how to keep people like him in our city so they don't leave. He serves the city in lots of ways. His day job, he's a Procter & Gamble guy, but he also serves us. He serves us. We would not have the student ministry in Mason if it wasn't for Justin, who volunteers. Now, we're going to watch his story and why we do this. This is the time in our service where those of you like me who've been around here forever and call this place home, this is our chance to give back. If you're new, first time here, please, this is not for you. We're just glad you're here. We're not about your money. Let that bag pass you right by. And let's look at Justin.
When I was growing up, serving wasn't a big part of my life until I got more involved in the Boy Scouts. The Scout Law and Oath talked about, you know, serving others, and on my honor, I will do my best to serve others. Our first Scout Master, Mr. Rattray, he would give his time every Monday when we had Boy Scouts at the church, and every month for our monthly campouts, he'd be there, he'd drive us, and he'd coordinate the trips and all that. And I just really appreciated this, all the time he spent with me and the rest of the guys, just teaching us things from Boy Scouts, whether it's knot tying, or he was a big guy into sailing, so he took us on sailing trips and caving and rappelling, and really throughout all that, you know, just taught us how to be men. One of the biggest things was I was in an organization that enabled me to take a trip to a camp in Michigan. This was Camp Minnewanka, and this was an international leadership camp. And that, I would say, was an experience that really altered my life and how I think about serving. The camp really talked to you about a way of living your life, you know, from a spiritual perspective, from a physical perspective, from a mental perspective. And it talked about the importance of service, of servant leadership. And there were students there from all over the world and from all walks of life. And you really got to do service with these guys. And there was a quote from a book of the founder of this camp. And the quote is, never give up until you have released your unused capacity for service and shared your gift with others. One enkindled spirit can set hundreds on fire. As I was listening to this and really internalizing this, it really made me think that as an individual, we may not think that we can make a difference, but we really can. And from there, it really sparked in me the fact that even though I'm one person, I do have gifts that God's given me, and I can make a difference. And I think that really was the spark that's kind of got me on my path to service. I always try and see, you know, where can I make a difference? Where can I add value? I feel like the more I volunteer, the more rooted in the city and rooted in the organization where I'm serving. And it's really through service where you feel community. I do have a friend, very, very old friend, and he was having a couple questions about his marriage and going through a very specific rough time, and actually asked me for some advice. And you know, I listened, didn't try and one-up him, and just talked about some things that were going on in my own marriage and just provided him with a couple of suggestions and thoughts, but most importantly, just support. I try and go that extra mile and try and go a little deeper and have a more serious conversation and not just keep it at the surface and get vulnerable. By listening to them and just receiving what they're saying and being that ear for them to talk to, I think that really just demonstrates service and making it not about yourself, but about that other person. And he sent me a text back like later that night saying, hey, you know, things weren't as bad as they seemed. I really appreciate the time that you took to talk. And it was a matter of just, you know, stopping and engaging. I could have easily said, you know, I don't have time, I'm on my way home, I gotta go, but I really saw that as a moment where someone was reaching out. And it's hard for guys to reach out to other guys and talk like that. And I feel like it helped. And I feel like for us, it brought us a little bit closer together. Marriage and service go hand in hand. I feel like what we've been able to do is to really appreciate the gifts that we each bring to the marriage. And there are times when I am lower and I submit myself to her, specifically I'd say around our son. For me, I'm like, oh, I know everything, I got to figure it out, but I really don't. She is an awesome mom, and she just has this unique knack of knowing how to take care of him. For me, serving teaches me that God loves us and he wants us to love our neighbors and love the rest of the world like he loves us. When I serve, I get much more than I give. I realize that it's not about me. I realize that I'm helping, you know, a broader community. And for me, I realize that it makes me feel like I'm part of something bigger. I should continue to serve, not out of obligation, but just out of love and my passion for service.
Ah. Thank you, Justin, for being such a good soldier. You know, Paul writes again to us a little later to the Philippian group, and he talks about what it means to serve. And this is what he says in Philippians 2. He says, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, but in humility, consider others better than yourself. He says we're supposed to have the same attitude as Jesus, that who being in very nature God, didn't consider equality with God something to be grasped, but made himself nothing, taking the very nature of a servant. You know, this is hard to do, I think. I mean, I really don't want to think of myself as being less than somebody else. I mean, the thing that gets me pumped up is thinking of myself as being better. I mean, I might secretly posture, you know, I kind of can posture the way that I'm really not as good, or I really think of myself as less, but I mean, if I'm honest, I really kind of like thinking of myself as better than somebody. I like being the best. I mean, I worked in the corporate world for 25 years, and most of that time was spent as a banker. I worked for U.S. Bank, which is the sixth largest bank in the country. That means it's big. It's also not just big, it's also a high-performing bank. And we used to get these industry rankings. Any of you, you know what that's like. I won't bore you with the measures that bankers use to measure top-performing banks, but we'd get these measures, and man, I would get pumped up. I'd go scouring these things, looking to see if I could find where U.S. Bank was listed, and almost all the time, we were listed number one, at least in one of the measures. And in the other measures, we were usually top 25%, sometimes top 5, sometimes top 10, but that made me feel good. I mean, I got pumped up thinking I was part of a team that was the best at what we did. And I just didn't get pumped up. I mean, I would share those rankings with all the people that worked for me. I'd explain them, and I would get them pumped up. And I mean, not just pumped up, I'd say, you know what? No matter how good we were doing, I'd find this moment as a chance to call out for what? Get better, strive harder, we can do more, right? I mean, one of the best recognitions I ever got is that industry. They, one year, chose me as like the 25 most powerful women nationally in banking. I felt pretty good. Well, and then we had these internal rankings in the company every week. And I defined success for myself and my team as being like, not on the bottom. Don't be on the bottom. Don't ever get ourselves on the bottom. I mean, maybe not number one every week, but we should always be in the top three, top five. That's how I define success. I mean, I really don't like being the least. I don't like being on the bottom. I mean, we used to do March Madness stuff, you know, basketball poll at the bank. I mean, I didn't even like being last in March Madness. I mean, it was like, it feels bad. Being last feels bad. I mean, I feel humiliated. I feel stupid. I feel embarrassed. I mean, it's kind of shameful. Let's look at what Paul says again in Philippians. He says, do nothing out of selfish ambition. He says, be like Jesus who, being in very nature God, didn't consider equality with God something to be grasped, but made himself nothing. Taking the very nature of a servant. I think nothing is pretty close to last, would you say? I mean, on the bottom. So I'm sitting here thinking, I love being the best, and Jesus, through Paul, is telling me I should be like him. I mean, think about this story. It is a little weird, right? I mean, here's God. We're not talking banking now. We're talking about God, the most powerful force. And he's the guy, if we think military terms, like we're talking about being soldiers today, I mean, he's the guy in charge. I mean, this is the top guy. He'd be the general in the army, right? I mean, he's coming here to recruit other people to be part of his army, to be a soldier, to follow him. And he says, if we want to follow him, if we want to be in his army, guess what? We have to lose. We have to surrender. We have to do the white flag thing. I mean, I'm always amazed when I think about his entrance in the world. I mean, the people he's coming to recruit to join his army, right? They've been waiting a long time. They're thinking powerful ruler, a guy who can come in and turn heads, take prisoners. And he disappoints them all. I mean, he comes as a kid, as the least, the last. Now, the first piece of the answer to why serving makes us strong, makes us stronger, it's in that fact. It's the fact that Jesus came to serve us first. He didn't tell us to serve. He came and he served. And when I think about serving, that's where I start. It's rooted in that fact. It's rooted in the fact that I got served first. Now, you know, when I think about this whole paradox thing of wanting to be best, Jesus saying, be the least, I get a little comfort when I think about Jesus' friends, because they were a lot like me and they didn't really get it. And he had been with them for 3 years. And this is the story that got told on them. I mean, James and John, two of his very favorite soldiers, right? It's right before Jesus dies. So it's a couple nights before. He's facing the most difficult part of his mission. And the mother of his two favorite guys comes to Jesus and says, you know, I'd like a favor. See, when you come into your kingdom, and she's thinking kingdom, power, wealth, honor, right? When you come into your kingdom, I want you to give my two sons here, James and John, I want you to give them a special place of honor. Well, you can imagine how the other 10 guys felt, right? I mean, when they heard about what James and John did, they're going, Why do they get special treatment, huh? I mean, what about us? What about us? Which really meant, you know, what about me? And I thought of all the times in the corporate world I was in my corporate life, when I felt just like those other 10 guys. I mean, I struggled all the time, right? Somebody gets promoted and I'm going, are they getting ahead of me? Or, you know, bonuses are supposed to be secret, but they're not always secret, and a word would leak out, and I'd hear the number, and I'd think, oh my gosh, I know what I got. It wasn't that good. Are they more valued than I am? And then, oh my gosh, office reseating, right? I mean, that is the biggest, least best thing you ever could go through. And I think the bank redesigned office space at least 3 times while I was there. And it was always like, okay, did you get the office with the door, or did you get a cubicle? And if you already had an office with the door, did you get the door office with the window? And then if you already had a window, did you get the view? I mean, it was endless. It was crazy. It was the biggest statement of who's best, who's least, who's most valued, who's not, that you could ever imagine. Well, James and John, they were doing that same thing. And those 10 guys were kind of angry. And how does Jesus respond to them? I mean, this is how the story goes. He hears all their mumblings. He hears all their grumblings. And he tells mom first. He says, hey, mom, you know, you're asking for your 2 sons to have a special place. Well, guess what? You have no idea what you are asking for, because you don't know what that means. And then he gets them all together so nobody can say, okay, he told me this, but he didn't tell me this. He gets them all together. He has a teaching moment, and this is what he says. Matthew says, Jesus says, you know the rulers in this world, they lord it over those under them. But among you, it will be different. See, whoever wants to be a leader among you must be your servant. And whoever wants to be first among you must become your slave. Right after he tells him that, then he shows him. And it's just shortly after this conversation that they go to dinner, and they're in a room. And it's not just any dinner, it's a big dinner, it's Passover, it's a big festival, big feast. And they all come in, and the 10 disciples, Jesus' soldiers, his friends, they're still kind of grumbling and mumbling about what John and James just did. And then all of a sudden they look around, and, you know, it was customary at that time that they would arrange, when they had dinner, they would arrange for somebody to come in and clean up. I mean, clean them up. Because remember, there wasn't any paved roads, no expressways. Feet got pretty grimy. And they didn't eat dinner the way we did, you know, where there's a nice little table. We tuck our feet underneath so all the grime's kind of hidden. See, they ate dinner on like these big like mattress-like cushions. So it was very likely that somebody's feet would be real close to somebody else's mouth. So it was important that they got cleaned up. And the disciples are all together, and they realize nobody has arranged for anybody to do the cleanup. And nobody says a word because, right, especially after what James and John just asked for, that, you know, could they have a special place of honor? Could they be called the greatest? I mean, nobody was going to volunteer and say, well, if you volunteered it, you might have to do the cleanup. And if you did the cleanup, guess what that meant? I mean, you were the least of the group. And you know, you might have heard this story before, but Jesus does it. I mean, he gets up, and he takes a towel and a basin, and he cleans them all up, every one of them. I mean, even the guy that's going to be a traitor to him in the next couple hours. I mean, he cleans them up. And then just so they don't miss the point, in John, he records what Jesus tells him, and this is what he says. He says, you know, you call me teacher and Lord, and you're right, because that's what I am. And since I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you ought to wash each other's feet. I've given you as an example to follow. Do as I have done to you. See, Jesus takes a friggin' towel. We're still talking about it today. I mean, he gives us a sign. And with that towel, he redefines greatness for us. Now, when I was thinking about what would be a good example in my life of struggling with this great lease thing? I immediately thought of something. And it happened to me right after high school. I got a good lesson in this. Right after high school, guess what I did? I went into the convent. I was a nun. See? Can you find me? Can you pick me out? I was in with a class. I'm the one in black there. Can you see that? Left hand back corner, that's me. I even had a nun name, Sister Kathleen Marie. And I lasted 3 years. And then they asked me to leave. Now, you laugh, but I mean, I was sincere about wanting to serve. I wanted to do good. I went in the convent to, you know, do what nuns do. I mean, I was willing to take a vow of poverty. I was willing to be celibate. I wanted to serve. I wanted to make a difference in life doing this. I didn't get the whole thing about Jesus' message about how you really do that. See, I went in with that group, and it was the 60s, so some of you probably didn't remember the 60s, but you've heard stories. It was in the Catholic Church, it was Vatican II. That was the big thing, and we were on fire with change. I mean, we thought if we joined the convent, we could actually change the church. We could teach the church about what American women are supposed to be like these days, right? I mean, talk about selfish ambition and vain conceit. My gosh, we were full of it. I mean, we actually thought we could do that. I mean, we were naive, right? But we were also pretty arrogant. And I mean, we didn't respect anybody there. We didn't respect the rules. I mean, we would break them all the time. I mean, me and our little team, when we used to go out to the cemetery behind the convent, I mean, we'd sneak cigarettes back there, you know? And then, I mean, we were college kids, right? So we'd talk to our friends, we'd talk to our family, and I mean, they would like smuggle alcohol in to us. I mean, I'm embarrassed. I can't believe they really put up with me for 3 years, actually. I mean, they should have probably gotten rid of me a lot longer. But I learned a lesson. I learned that choosing, wanting to serve is just a piece of the message. What Jesus is telling us is something a lot more radical than that. He's saying, you gotta surrender. You gotta surrender. Now, his key, what he's telling us, is that if we want to really experience freedom, we do it by surrendering and by serving, because that's the way he breaks us free. He knows how hard we hang on to selfish ambition. He knows we want to be seen as the best and the greatest. He knows how tough that's going to be, so he knows the only way we get free of that, free of the worry to constantly strive, to constantly promote ourselves, to constantly, you know, try to not be taken advantage of. I mean, you know, if you say no to all that, and you say yes to somebody else's stuff, somebody else's needs, somebody else's agenda, somebody else's reputation, well, then you don't care if you're taken advantage of, because you've already decided it doesn't matter. That's the freedom. And after I left the convent, I went through a couple jobs, and I actually probably learned the meaning of surrender and the meaning of serving actually in the corporate world. That's where I learned it. I mean, I learned what it means to submit to authority. I started developing a healthy respect because I was surrounded by colleagues who a lot of times were a whole lot better than me. And I learned what loyalty meant. I mean, the bank, during those 23 years, I mean, there were good times and there were bad times, and I learned what it meant to guard their reputation even when it was painful and it was difficult. And then I had a really good boss. And you know what? About halfway through my career at U.S. Bank, I got him as my boss, and he really served me. I mean, he built into me. He helped coach me. He taught me what it's like to lead by serving me. He gave me a lot of opportunities to grow. He put me in the limelight. He covered my back if I made a mistake. And by him serving me, I got it. This is how I serve others. And so I could do the same things he did for me to my team. And I figured out really quickly that my job as a manager of a fairly large team in a pretty large bank was basically to serve, to help them do what they do, to help them grow, to help them build a reputation, to help them get promoted. And that if I did that, everything else would work. And there was great freedom in that. Now, the second thing about serving that I learned was that deciding to serve and being a servant is really two different things. See, when you decide to serve, you're still in charge. You decide to do good. You decide to do good for somebody, to do something nice. You decide to give money to something. You decide to give your time to something. Being a servant means you're not in charge anymore. It means that I don't have control over my time or my money or my skills and gifts and talents. I don't. I'm making them available to the circumstance or the person that's in front of me in any given moment. See, if the person in front of me is more important than what's on my to-do list for the day, see, the person in front of me or the circumstance in front of me that has needs, that's like more important if I'm a servant than what I had decided to do with my money maybe last week, because now all of a sudden it's changed and I see it for something else. And see, if I'm available, then I focus on the moment, and in focusing on that moment, I decide if I can serve in my own unique way. See, you won't find me very often choosing to serve by making casseroles for people. Now, I value that. I've had casseroles made for me and homemade soup, and it's really special. I just don't have that gift. I never learned how to cook. When I do, it's not very good. I'm kind of embarrassed to make it a way that I serve, so I tend not to be, I'm not called to serve that way. Or, you know, gosh, don't ask me to serve musically. I mean, I'm tone deaf. I mean, I'm the ones that, you know, I mouth the words, "Don't say anything, Kath," when I was in the choir, you know, just. But I mean, aren't we glad as a community that we have the Josh and Robbies and Erica's and Keenan's of the world who serve us? I mean, oh my gosh. How much richer they make our lives. They make my life. I mean, they write, "Be strong." I love that song. And they wrote that. They serve us. I mean, they could be doing anything else with their talent and probably making a whole lot more money than what they do for us, serving right here musically. So I was kind of aware of the things, the opportunities I might have when I knew I was going to be doing this message about when I got a chance to serve. And I had a lot of them. I mean, I had a lot of them. I'll just share one story. It was Saturday afternoon. And oh, by the way, did I tell you that if you make yourself available and focus on the moment, normally when you have to serve, it's not very convenient. I mean, remember Paul said, if you're going to be a soldier of Christ, you're going to have some hardship. So it's Saturday afternoon. I have a commitment dinner that night. It's the end, late afternoon, 4, 5 o'clock. I'm finishing up household projects. The phone rings. It's LaShonda. The first question out of her mouth was, "Kath, do you know anything about payday lenders?" Now, see, I can help here, right? I'm a banker. I know all about payday lenders. And I go, "LaShonda, why are you calling me? Why are you asking me about this?" See, LaShonda was a woman who I got to know because I worked with a group called the Gardens of Greenup. And they're in Greenup Street in Covington. And they provide housing, subsidized housing for women and their children who are coming out of homeless situations or coming out of the court system. And they subsidize the rent while these women get the education they need, work on job skill development. They try to improve themselves and become self-sufficient. It's a great program, actually. Well, I got to know LaShonda working with that program, and guess what? LaShonda graduated. She graduated like a year ago. Last summer, she got out of the Gardens. She went, got her own place. She was able to do that because through the program, she got a really good job. I mean, a really good job. She's making more money than she has ever made before. And so that's why I'm kind of surprised. Sorry, she's calling me, asking me about a payday lender. And then I said, "What's going on?" And then the tears came, right? And she goes, oh, Kath, she says, I didn't lose my job. That's the first thing she told. I didn't lose my job. I still have it. It's still really good. I'm doing well. But you know what? I think when I moved out of the gardens, I actually probably bit off a little bit more rent expense than I could afford. And I've been straining ever since. And you know how I got all my credit cards down to zero? Well, guess what? My credit cards are up at their limit again. And then now my car died and I don't know what else to do. And see, I'm a banker, so I could help her think through. We talked through what are your options, how to tackle this problem, blah, blah, blah. But more importantly, I was able to encourage her because in those tears, what Lashonda was telling me was, I feel like a failure. I mean, I feel like I've gone backwards. I mean, I feel like I'm in exactly the same place I was when I went to the gardens. And it's awful, and I can't believe I did it, and I'm so mad at myself, and I'm so angry, and she's got accusing. Oh, she's having all these feelings of failure. Now, Lashonda happens to be a believer in Jesus, and I'm a believer in Jesus, and so I said to her, I said, Lashonda, those feelings that you're having about how you're failing and how you're going backwards, those are not from God. I know that much. They're not from God. I mean, you made one mistake, that's all. Your rent expense is a little too high, and that's had some consequences for you, but you can fix this. You are not going backwards. You are not a failure. That's not happening. Let's pray right now. And so we prayed on the phone. Let's pray right now that God will protect you from all of those negative thoughts and all that feeling of failure, because Lashonda, you're loved, you're wonderful, and you are going to make it. You've got your job. You're doing well. You're going to overcome this mistake, and you're going to get back. In fact, you're even going to be better than you've ever been in the future. See, I could help her there. I could help in that situation. I could help with the gifts that I had. You know, there's nothing really big and grand lots of times about serving. I mean, it kind of happens in those really small, ordinary moments. And you know, Jesus answered the question of why should we not be in charge and make ourselves available to others? He answered the question right after he washed their feet and he was telling them that this was an example they should follow. And if you remember that story, or let me give it to you if you don't remember, what he says, do this, do just like what I did, and I tell you the truth, you're going to be blessed. Now, blessed, in a scripture sense, what blessed means like happy, like over the top happy, like Sarah and Mike happy at the Thanksgiving food drive happy. I mean, like, wow, exhilarated, full of joy. Jesus promises that. He says, if you lose control, if you surrender yourself, and make your gifts available to others, and something wonderful happens. Greg Boyd, who is a theologian recognized nationally and a good friend at Crossroads, many of you know him because he's been here, he says this. He says, I've become convinced that remaining aware of God's presence is the single most important task in the life of every follower, soldier of Jesus. He's saying if we're aware of the person or circumstance that's in front of us and we're available to them with the gifts and we're able to serve, he says that's the most important task if we're a soldier of Jesus. He says, I'm convinced that this challenge is implied in our commitment to surrender our life. For the only real life we have to surrender is the one we live each moment. And see, when we serve in those little small ordinary moments, well, those moments become sacred. I always love Boyd's definition of love. He says, ascribing unsurpassable worth to someone else at a cost to ourselves. And every time we do that, he says, we make God's kingdom, the place where he reigns, we make it a little larger. So, serving. We aren't called to serve to solve the world's problems. And we aren't called to serve to make ourselves feel good. I mean, we're called to serve because we're in his army. We're one of his soldiers. We're following his lead. He says, be nothing. And every time we love like he loves, every time we surrender ourselves and make ourselves available to somebody else, every time we come under another person and let them know that they have unsurpassable worth in God's eyes, every time we do that, God's army, it gets healthier. It gets stronger. It gets bigger. And I don't know about you, but I want to sign up for that. I want to stand up, make me a soldier, I'm ready to go.